The Gadget Guide.
Right, good evening and welcome along to The Gadget Guide. This week coming live from the National Hamfest up at Newark, a little bit outside of Cambridge. But we're out and about supporting National Amateur Radio. Speaking of radio, we'll be talking in a few moments about DAB Digital Radio, which of course Cambridge 105 is now live on. But first of all, a quick look at some of the tech news. Lawrence, last fortnight we mentioned about the iPad Pro being launched, the gigantic iPad with the pencil and the keyboard. But that's not all that Apple's been up to.
No, so I mean, at the same time they launched the new iPad 6S, which of course everyone was expecting that they'd bring out a new iPhone. At the same time they announced the new iOS 9, so this is the latest version of Apple's operating system for the newer generation iPhones and iPod touches and so on, and is available for you to install. And that's quite a big download. Make sure you're on a good high-speed broadband. Slow ADSL, it could take you the whole day. This is available for your iPads as well as your iPhones. Adds quite a lot of nice new features as well as some security improvements, which is good. Always good to see security improvements coming out on our mobile devices. The other big thing that they didn't actually have ready at that time, but which has come out in the last few days, is an update for your Apple Watch. So anyone who's got an Apple Watch has now had an update, or should be able to do the update for that, to the latest version 2. And what this adds is the facility to run applications on your Apple Watch. So now you can actually run stuff on your watch that doesn't require your phone to be near you to interact with, which is a first for the Apple Watch. Something that's been available on other smartwatches for a while, but has now hit the Apple market.
And presumably this is the sort of thing that they always knew that they wanted to be able to do it, but yeah, they wanted to get the hardware out there, get it out there, see how people use it, and then take the opportunity to develop the feature set further.
Yes, and you know, you might be able to update, and the challenge is there's no apps yet for it, but those will be coming soon. So you know, you're going to expect to see applications that you'll actually be able to do some tap interactions, possibly some voice interactions with an application that will run directly on your watch. So hopefully some cool stuff coming there. Other things that were launched in the last few days, Amazon have launched a new tablet computer. So another, we talked about the Tesco Huddle Android tablet a good while ago when that came out, and Tesco already on their version 2. Amazon have had a range of tablets out for a while running their Fire operating system, which is a derivative of Android, uses Amazon's App Store, and it's quite a nice operating system.
Now, is that you mentioned the Amazon App Store. Does that mean if you're going to get one of these, unlike a regular Android tablet, you're going to be more limited in which applications you can run, or is there still a decent range?
So a lot of developers have worked out that if they've written an Android application, they can publish it to Google's App Store and Amazon's App Store at exactly the same time. The code is exactly the same. All it is that is different is that the developer program is slightly different. You can get slightly different rates for your apps if you're selling them on Amazon's App Store. But it's just another app store, just like the Apple Store. Most software developers who are building mobile phone and mobile device applications are smart enough to realize, put it everywhere. The bulk of everything that you get on the Google Play Store will be available in the Amazon App Store.
And there's an interesting pricing thing on this, on the new Fire one, isn't there? Because it's only £50 to start with. But I suppose it's something you might more have expected from the supermarkets with the Tesco Huddle. It's not quite buy one, get one free, but it's buy five, get the sixth free, for presumably for families who want a few tablets.
So, of course, you haven't mentioned the price yet. The price is £50 for the Fire 7-inch, which is their new one. It's a reasonable specification system. It's a 1024x600 7-inch display, quad-core processor, the Amazon App Store, and like you said, buy five, get one free. This is available if only 1 6-pack per customer. But if you think about it, you know, you've got the whole family there and possibly a few extended family members that you can give a pretty respectable tablet to for a very, very reasonable price. And the other interesting thing about the Amazon App Store is they've just launched their Underground Edition. So it's pre-installed on the new tablets. And Amazon Underground is a different way of Amazon working with software developers who normally charge for their apps or charge for in-app purchases. So most of us have played a game or something that says, you know, you've got to level 50. Now, do you want to play level 60? That'll be £1.99, please. Please pay in the game. And what Amazon have decided to do is make applications really free. So a lot of apps that you'd normally pay for in the main app stores or that you'd have in-game purchases, they're making free. What they're doing is they're subsidizing these costs to the developers based on how many minutes the application is used.
And this is presumably an effort on their part. I think we mentioned this briefly a little while back. This is presumably an effort for them to drive not only, you know, more apps to the Amazon ecosystem. You can install Amazon Underground, I think, on normal Android tablets as well. But it's also to drive really good quality apps, because, of course, if you look in any of the app stores, this goes for both Android and iOS, there is a lot of junk. Let's be fair. You know, there is an awful lot of lightsaber apps. There's an awful lot of torch apps. And, you want your lightsaber and you want your torch, but one of them's good enough. And so really they're trying to reward developers who are creating the high quality content, because those are the developers that are going to get paid for it. So it's a really interesting way of doing it. And presumably Amazon can afford to do this because it's driving more people to their platform.
Yes, it gets more people into the Amazon App Store, so more people will pay for apps that aren't subsidized if the average app is a better quality, as you said. So, yeah, hopefully it'll whittle down that, you know, you go and you search for, I want an app that is going to just show me the best restaurant in the area to find, and I go and I do that sort of search and I get presented with hundreds of applications. I don't know which is going to be the best one, whereas Amazon will have curated these applications, decided that the best five that they found are these ones, and they'll put those at the top of the list, reward those developers, like you said. We're going to get better content, we're going to get better apps, better user experience, all good all round.
Okay, so that's Apple, it's Amazon. Moving further down the alphabet, Google have released a bit of a security update recently, haven't they? This is for the Android lock screen. There was a little bit of a vulnerability that they've strengthened up in the most recent versions of Android.
So, yes, there was a flaw in the lock screen on many Android devices running the latest version, so version 5 of the operating system, so Lollipop, and I think it affected some versions of KitKat as well. But it basically meant that if you entered a long password of rubbish when there was a password set, the lock screen would crash and let you into the phone.
So basically your cats can get in by randomly typing characters, but
might be how it was discovered, but yes. So, I mean, the immediate suggestions from Google were go for a pattern lock, go for a face lock, go for a fingerprint lock if you've got a fingerprint reader, or a 6-digit or longer PIN number. And turn on the, you know, if you've entered it so many times wrong, lock the phone for a couple of minutes, basically to slow anyone trying to hack it down, and turn on things like phone encryption. You know, all these sort of good things are in the phone. So they've released a patch. Apparently it's still possibly vulnerable, but, you know, the manufacturers are working on that and locking things as fast as possible. A lot of new phones are now coming out with fingerprint readers. Use that. It's pretty difficult to hack someone's fingerprint. I mean, I've got a fingerprint reader on my Galaxy S6. Sometimes it doesn't recognize my fingerprints, which is obviously entertaining, and I have to enter my password, which is a nice long password. But yeah, it's got good security controls, and, you know, check your manufacturer's updates. Go to About Phone, check for updates. Do that regularly, or just set it to automatically check for you.
Yep, and it's definitely good to see more and more of the manufacturers actually responding to these security incidents, responding quickly, getting updated versions out. But it is interesting, because there's a limit to how old a device the manufacturers will support. Now, certainly Android has been a lot better at kind of committing to supporting older hardware for 18 months after it stops being on sale. So you now know how long your phone is going to be supported, rather than, you know, buy a phone this week and then next week there's a new one and you never get any more updates. The commitments are a lot stronger, a lot more certain now. But with more and more sort of digital lives on these devices, I think you will almost see the life cycle being governed more by how secure they remain. In other words, your phone might function perfectly well after 3 years, but if it's no longer getting the security patches, then at that point you might want to consider replacing it to get something that is supported, and that'll be driving hardware.
I think you might find that'll start getting driven by the phone networks as well, when they realise that security is something that consumers are interested in. And, you know, when your phone network decides that it's going to upgrade its security and the hardware can't cope, I think that's going to seriously start driving these software changes. And hopefully we will get to a point where the phones will have better upgrade capabilities because of the phone networks requiring that sort of commitment as well from manufacturers. So you're not left in the lurch with a phone that's, you know, 2 years old. And if you think back to when we had, you know, brick phones, you bought a Nokia 1610 and it lasted you for 7-8 years. Probably stayed on for most of that time as well without a charge. But you didn't think about the fact that I needed a new phone because it was out of date or it was insecure. Whereas that's suddenly becoming a thing. So, yeah, maybe the networks will start to take an interest.
Very good. Well, we'll be back talking about DAB radios in just a couple of moments after the travel. Right, well, welcome back to the Gadget Guide. And now that we've got the technology news out of the way, time for a quick look at DAB digital radio. Now, it may be that you're already listening to this on DAB, as, of course, Cambridge 105 went live on our trial of DAB radio just a few weeks ago. But we thought we'd take a quick look behind the scenes at some of the technology and some of the options if you're not yet equipped for DAB. So first of all, a quick outline of what DAB is and what the point of it is. We've been using for broadcast analog FM radio, and this has been around for tens of years now. It's what you're used to when you hear 105 megahertz, for example. And that's great. It works well. But there's some advantages to moving to a digital system. So in the same way as a few years ago we moved the terrestrial broadcasting, it went from the old analog, we had the digital switchover. That's when you maybe had to get a new television or you got a free view box to sit on top of it or a satellite box of some description. This is the same technology change for radio. Now, at the moment, there's no fixed date for switching off the old analog radio. That's at least a few years away, if not a little more. But there is an awful lot of content that is available on DAB, Cambridge 105, of course, but also some of the other stations that aren't available on FM nationally. So, for example, some of the BBC services, Six Music, BBC Radio 4 Extra, and a lot of commercial channels.
Yeah, I mean, one of the new commercial ones was Radio X, which launched last week, and they're on the digital multiplex, national multiplex. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting platform because some people have pulled off it, but some people are still going on, like Global have launched that Radio X onto the platform. So it's a platform that's matured, and I bought a DAB radio quite a few years ago and had to fish it out the other day to tune 105 in on it. Stopped using it, mainly because things like Cambridge 105 wasn't on it, but also because a lot of stations had moved off it and gone internet only, because they were already digital, it made sense for them to do that when they decided that DAB was too expensive. Now, because of the technology changes and improvements, and this is why 105 is now available on DAB, is because it's now become cheaper to create your content for the DAB system. So this is turning your audio into the right digital stuff to go onto the DAB system. That used to require racks full of expensive equipment that you'd have to spend thousands of pounds on, and now you can do it on a small computer.
Yeah, and it's worth saying there are some definite advantages. And of course, yeah, there is more choice in terms of stations, but since no one wants to listen to anything apart from Cambridge 105, of course, we'll leave that one aside. But there's some other advantages.
We don't do enough sport, so there's also the Talk Sport and so on.
Oh, you're not listening on a Saturday afternoon.
Do the cricket, I think Julian will say.
But there is some other advantages. So with FM, as the signal gets weaker, it starts getting scratchier, a bit crackly, maybe you get some interference. With DAB, it's a little bit different. It's not perfect. You know, as you drive further away, it will get worse. But it will stay very, very good right up until the point it stops working. So it goes from very good
to nothing
at all in a very short space of time. And that can be helpful if you're listening somewhere a little bit marginal. So, for example, I live up in Cottenham, and the FM signal there is okay, but it's a little bit hissy. We're just outside of the normal service area for Cambridge 105. On DAB, it's a perfect signal. So there's some useful stuff there. Now, DAB has had its share of criticism over the years. And part of this was that the UK was actually a very early adopter of digital radio. We went in with the original DAB, Digital Audio Broadcasting Standard, which was using technology available at the time. Several other European countries started with that, but then either stopped or hadn't got there when the new DAB Plus standard came out. And now this used wasn't compatible with the radios that were already on the market. It needed new radios. Now, Lawrence, you'll mention in a moment about some of the radios now on the market that do both DAB and DAB Plus. But it does mean that the UK is still on the original DAB platform. And that means that on some of the sets of channels, they try to squeeze an awful lot of channels into a small space. And therefore, the audio quality of the channels maybe isn't quite as good as it would be on a very good FM channel. We're fortunate here at the moment. The trial that we're part of, there's not too many of us squeezed in. We've got a little bit more room to breathe, and we can keep the quality up.
I suppose it's the same as if you look at your digital Freeview that you can watch these days. You know, you're looking at BBC One in HD, great signals. You flip through the channel to those high numbers where there's all those really odd shopping channels, and you look at the picture quality and you go, that looks appalling. In fact, VHS tape looked better, for those who remember VHS, or even DVD versus Blu-ray. And it's just because they've squeezed all of those guys with the low-budget channels into a very small amount of space. Same with DAB. So what they've done for the channels on the national multiplex that aren't as popular is they've reduced the amount of bandwidth for the audio, which doesn't sound as rounded, doesn't sound as crisp as the full quality. And then some of them they've even dropped to mono. So for things like sport reporting, you don't necessarily need a stereo signal. Although surround sound effects of stadiums, yeah, that requires a nice amount of bandwidth. So, you know, it's one of those things that they've fitted into what the technology is. So, I mean, moving on to the radios that are available, when you start shopping for your new DAB radio, look for something that can do DAB and DAB Plus. That will then at least give you a bit of future-proofing. Now, the pricing is comparable between the two these days because the manufacturers of these things are putting the same stuff on the same chip. It's all software, really, that's doing the magic behind it. So DAB Plus, the thing to look for on your radio. Plenty of stuff available. You can buy kitchen type radios for under £50 now, so they're not horribly expensive. You can buy little portable pocket ones for the 50 to 60 bracket. You'll find them in all the high street major electrical retailers, so you can go and have a look at all of these DAB radios and listen to them working. But of course, there's a few areas where you might think this is a bit more difficult, and that's things like your car.
Yeah, and this is something that has taken the car manufacturers quite a long time to really get up to speed on, because there's been this lack of European DAB broadcasting, and also the European DAB Plus that does now exist tends to actually be on some different frequencies. That means that we've not seen a lot of UK cars, even brand new ones, fitted with DAB. That's starting to change now. Ford are putting it into some of their slightly higher end audio systems, as are some of the other manufacturers. But it's okay. Don't worry, if you've just got a car that's FM only, there's plenty of options there. You can actually get a little add-on unit, can't you?
So, yeah, I mean, like you said, a lot of cars not having it, but some are now, and I think the manufacturers are probably putting it in DAB+. But what you can get is you can get cigarette lighter socket plug-in widgets that will give you a DAB receiver that will then retransmit the DAB signal on FM for you. So you can tune your car radio to an unused FM channel and tune your little DAB widget to Cambridge 105 and receive 105 then on DAB, rebroadcast it into your car radio. Some of them have got hardwired connections. If you've got an aux in on your radio, you can plug it in that way. Some of them have got USB attachments if you've got a USB car radio. So there's that. Otherwise, if you're into your car audio, you might want to actually rip the car radio out that you've got and put in a new head unit. And all the major brands, the Kenwoods, the Pioneers and Blaupunkt and so on, have got head units with DAB, and some of them got add-ons. So if you've already got a high-end Pioneer, you might find there's a DAB box that can literally just go under the passenger seat, new aerial, or sometimes they plug on the existing aerial and suddenly DAB is available on your car radio. So it's relatively easy to add DAB to a car radio. And I mean, you know, the plug-in cigarette lighter widget started about £60. So, you know, not expensive to add DAB to your car.
And it'll be interesting, I guess, to see where this technology does go, because we mentioned DAB+. Ofcom, who regulate the broadcasting communications markets, are now contemplating DAB+ trials in the UK alongside the existing DAB services. So in the same way as on Freeview, you might have BBC One and BBC One HD. you can now maybe expect Cambridge 105, Cambridge 105 HD, dare I say it.
Oh, that's probably going to upset the marketing team, Rob.
Exactly. But there is this opportunity. But there's a lot of work they need to do before we can just turn those services on. You need to check that all of the existing radios, the ones that people have bought for the last few years, check that, okay, they won't be able to listen to the DAB Plus channels, but check that adding those channels doesn't upset the existing DAB channels. That needs to be tested, and make sure that all of that stuff that you might have already at home isn't going to suddenly become useless.
So as you said, that the DAB Plus uses different frequencies, but they've got to make sure that those frequencies aren't in use by other users in the UK. So yeah, a lot of work. Hopefully it'll come soon. It'll give us a lot more flexibility and a lot more fun options on radio. Cambridge 105 will be keeping abreast of these situations, and maybe one day 105 HD, like you said.
We'll see. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. So thanks very much, and we'll catch you probably back in the studio in a couple of weeks' time for the Gadget Guide.